The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me on CBS Sports Network, and we're going to be in front of these cameras for the next hour with four more Sweet 16 games set for tonight after we had four Sweet 16 games last night. We're going to get to all of it, but before we look ahead, let's look back, and let's start in the West region, where we got a pair of upsets on Thursday night. Didn't see that coming. Final score, Clemson 77, Arizona 72, so number two seed goes down. Final score, Alabama 89, North Carolina 87. Number one seed goes down, so it's Alabama-Clemson in Los Angeles on Saturday with a trip to the Final Four at stake. Devleg, did you ever think you'd live long enough to see Alabama and Clemson play each other in the Elite Eight of a men's NCAA basketball tournament? Because that's what we got going on this weekend in Los Angeles.
Let's rewind back to Thursday's podcast on CBS Sports Network, where we talked about the possibility of both of them. What did I say on Thursday's show? I said the tournament had been a little bit too chalky, a lot of chalk in the Sweet 16, and the universe, the basketball gods, they might well flex back at us and say, don't get too comfortable here. And that's exactly what we had with the top two seeds going down. And you know, Tommy Lloyd, you know, unfortunately, it has become a thing. I know you got into this on the overnight pod with Kyle Boone in that feed there. But to have a top two seed 3 years running, it means you're doing a really good job. 88 wins in 3 years, you're doing a good job. But it has become now a thing attached to him. And it actually predates him with Sean Miller. They now have lost six consecutive games in the tournament. When they've taken their loss, it's been to a team seeded fourth or worse. So we're going to talk plenty Bama Clemson, but I just can't get out of here with at least addressing the fact that Arizona was done in by a Clemson team that shot well and was hot from the field. They were ready to go. I thought it was an excellent coaching job by Brownell. And with Carolina, I just didn't think that Hubert Davis coached his best game, to say the least. And Alabama, credit to them playing the way they did. Grant Nelson, who, if you watched Thursday's show, I mean, we particularly pointed out that Grant Nelson had to have a good game. He had 6 points in the first two tournament games and hadn't been playing well as of late. Had his best game since he got to Bama, GP. So congrats to the Tide. Congrats to the Tigers. We have a college football flavor in Los Angeles in the regional final there. But I would say the way that both Carolina and Arizona got taken out was surprising. And I know for those fan bases, it hurts because and losing in the tournament wherever hurts, but it must have been frustrating to actually see the way that those teams got beat.
Let's go back to Tommy Lloyd, because it's interesting. This guy's off to one of the greatest Division I men's head coaching starts in the history of college basketball. And yet, since what happened last night happened, folks are asking big questions about, you know, is this a true representation of what he is as a coach, somebody who can't deliver on the biggest stage, or is it just a small sample size and, you know, some unfortunate circumstances? But ultimately, big picture, let's focus on the big picture, which is the guy's running one of the best basketball programs in America. Where do you land on it? How do you balance all that with the fact that through 3 years, he's won two Pac-12 titles, two Pac-12 tournament titles, been a top two seed in the NCAA tournament all three times. Amazing. On the other hand, he has lost to a worse-seeded team in the NCAA tournament every single time he's been in it. What do you make of that?
Yeah, and the record, by the way, comes out to 4-3 in the tournament so far for Tommy Lloyd. Two Sweet 16s, then knocked out by the 15-seeded Princeton Tigers a year ago. This one's not that hard for me, Parrish. Tommy Lloyd is three seasons in, and he has, he came one win shy of tying Brad Underwood, who's coaching in the Elite Eight, and Brad Stevens, who is running the professional franchise where I'm coming to you now from Boston here, for most wins in the first three seasons of a head coaching career. I believe that we will, you know, let's fast forward, let's tweak the dial 5 years from now. And Tommy Lloyd, if not, will have made a Final Four. He'll been to a couple of Elite Eights. He'll continue to do well. He was at Gonzaga for so long and did such a huge part in building that program up to where Mark Few is in the Elite Eight again. We'll get to Gonzaga in a few. I think that he is the right guy for the job. I think he will eventually find success. I think the tournament criticism is validated. I get it, in particular, because if Tommy Lloyd had won 81 games through three seasons and not 88 and had Arizona as a three seed, a four seed, and a five seed, there wouldn't be as much. It would be more, hey, they're getting there. Like, they're getting there, but they're not there yet. But when you have the pressure, the target of a one or a two next to your school name, when you enter into this greatest event in American sports and you fail to reach your seed potential, if you're one or two, that means you should be making it to a regional final. He hasn't done that yet. It's going to bring criticism, but it's not an indictment on his ability to run a program, build a team, coach him up. And I think eventually he will knock this off, but it is undeniable. This has now become a thing that is attached to him. And because of the end of the Sean Miller career, it's also just something associated. When casual sports fans watch the tournament, fill out their brackets, now they are going to push back on the idea that Arizona will make the Final Four and make a deep run, because we just haven't seen it. We thought it could happen this year. They have not been since 2001, and they'll have to wait at least 24 years to get back.
I am unsurprised that the criticism has arrived. I do find it mostly misguided. I mean, the tournament lack of success is a real thing. You know, losing to a worse-seeded team in three straight NCAA tournaments, like, that's a pattern that people are going to focus on. By the way, if you want to ensure you want to, stop losing to better seeded teams, you could stop being a top two seed every time. That's one way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that's a proper strategy. I don't know if you saw Tommy's interview post-game with Allie LaForce after the disappointing loss, but among other things, he was very calm and composed and gave credit to the opponent, all that stuff. But he also said, we will be back here many times. And I thought it in a humbling moment, in a moment of disappointment, he still showed a level of confidence that if I were an Arizona fan, that's what I would focus on. Like, I that's going to be the type of clip that can resurface someday, the same way Dan Hurley's clip from a few years ago has resurfaced a million times, where he says, you better get us now because it's coming. Here was Tommy Lloyd after a third straight loss in the NCAA tournament to a worse seeded team. And he looks at Allie LaForce and he looks at the television cameras and he says, we're going to be back here many times. The suggestion being, we'll break through eventually. And the point I made on the Ion College Basketball Podcast overnight episode with Cal Boone is that everybody remembers, particularly when UConn's trying to do it right now, that Billy Donovan won back-to-back national championships. What fewer people remember is that in the 5 years before that, he was eliminated in the first or second round every single tournament for five straight years. And it was at that point that people were asking big questions about Billy Donovan. okay, he can build good teams and he can recruit. And he had that one Final Four that one time. But why is this guy getting eliminated in the round of 64, round of 32 every year? This guy can he just not do it in March? And then eventually he does it twice in March. Now he's in the NBA. He'll be in the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame someday. Bill Self used to have to answer questions like this. John Calipari used to have to answer questions like this. Jay Wright used to have to answer questions like this. Roy Williams used to have to answer questions like this. My point is, every guy gets told he can't do it or he might not be able to do it, particularly any guy who has high levels of success without reaching the Final Four or winning a national title. Those guys get told I don't know if they can do it up until they do. And they almost always do if they continue to build high-level elite basketball teams. I'm with you on this. If Tommy Lloyd continues to build basketball teams that are the exact same caliber of the first three basketball teams he's built at Arizona, he will go to a Final Four at some point. He will probably win a national championship at some point, rather than, if I were an Arizona fan, focus that we've lost to a worst-seeded team in three straight NCAA tournaments. I would focus on, we have a basketball coach who we were kind of unsure about when we hired him, and he's built a top two seed for the NCAA tournament in three straight years. That's amazing.
It is. And I think Arizona fans can rest on that knowing, and you're going to take that. Now, the dynamic of play here, and then we can kind of scoot around because we want to touch on that that regional before we move on to the next one, is that they're going into the Big 12, going to jump up a league. It's going to be a 16-team conference. So the dynamics that have been played that have actually helped Tommy Lloyd in the first three seasons with Arizona, just kind of vying for the most part with UCLA, all that wasn't the case this year. Those are going to change. Keep that in mind moving forward there. And since, you know, real quick on UNC and Carolina, that has become an interesting development with the loss here, because you had Hubert Davis, who was a little up and down until, you know, February in his first season. They make the title game. They beat Duke twice. And here we go. Last year was a huge disappointment. Now you have a one seed. RJ Davis has one of his worst games. The strange connection between RJ Davis and Caleb Love not hitting a three-pointer, 0-9 apiece from beyond the arc. Weird voodoo. Just a strange deal there. And the fact that they did not get out of this game and their best player didn't show up. I didn't think he needed to be the best player on the floor, as I said on Thursday's episode, GP. Bacot missed a dunk, which wound up being like this weird omen like that helped open the door for Bama. Again, credit to Nate Oates and everyone. But with UNC, now that fan base is sitting here like, yeah, the one seed was great, but we didn't even make an Elite Eight with this group, you know, and the way that we lost, it will just enable some people to just have a little bit of a, we like Hubert, but that butt is kind of like hanging out there. I think on balance, he's done a really, really good job inheriting that very tough gig. And if you look at everything he's done, to me, he's passed the test through three seasons. It's just really a stinging situation the Friday after the Sweet 16 when you thought your team was going to be able to handle Alabama better than it did.
The butt is hanging out there is not a phrase I think I've ever heard on the Ion College Basketball podcast before, but here we are. It must have been a wild experience for North Carolina fans last night. They file into Crypto.com Arena, which will never sound right, and they watch Arizona lose to Clemson while Caleb Love goes 5 of 16 from the field, 0 of 9 from 3, and they're probably sitting there going, see? We tried to tell you, that's why you don't want Caleb Love being your best player, taking all your shots, because then look what can happen. 0 of 9 from 3, and now your season's over. Go Tar Heels. And then they get on the court, and their best player, Caleb Love's former backcourt mate, also goes 0 of 9 from 3. I saw this from Jared Burson. They are the first two players in the history of the NCAA tournament to ever both shoot at least 0 of 9 from 3 on the same day. Not in the same building. Not in back-to-back games, not as former teammates. I mean, in the history of the NCAA tournament, no two dudes have ever shot this poorly from three-point range in the same on the same day, and it happened to be two guys that played together in a national championship game just a few years ago. So that was obviously a wild development. And then, you know, with Alabama, and then we'll get to the East region, it's just what I've said about them consistently. I don't know that Alabama was the best four seed in this NCAA tournament, but I always thought they were the scariest. And the reason they were the scariest is because they're so committed to a style of play like what I said pregame last night on March Madness 360 on CBS Sports Network, like ended up holding up pretty well. I said the problem with playing Alabama is that they're going to do what they do almost regardless of what you do. And if they do it well, you've got problems. So they're going to go out and try to take 33s. And if they make 12, 13, 14 of them, you're going to have big problems. Well, they didn't take 30, but they did take 26. And they didn't make 12, 13, or 14, but they did make 11. 11 of 26 from three, 42.3% from beyond the arc. When they're going to shoot it like that, and your best player is going to go 0 of 9 from 3, well, that's how you get eliminated as a one seed. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the East region, where there was less drama on Thursday night. Norlander was there to watch UConn's latest blowout. I'll ask him about that next. It's the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. We're on CBS Sports Network.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back into the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast on CBS Sports Network. It is also live television here, and so I'm going to take this segment all to myself. And you know what? I'm going to take it with glee because we're going to focus in on the East Regional Semifinals. I'm here in Beantown. I was in TD Garden on Thursday night, and as expected, I wrote on this for a column for CBSSports.com. The expectation was we would get one blowout and one close game. That's exactly what we got, and they were in that order. I'll go chronological here on UConn first, 82-52 over San Diego State. If you caught the show on Thursday, I asked GP, would we go over, under, or push of last year's national championship game spread of 17 points? GP took the under. I don't have my board here. I can't hit the GP I was wrong button, but he was wrong. I took the over, way over, 30-point spread. And what do we say about UConn at this point other than that this team is steamrolling its way into the history books? Now, it's still got to get a couple more wins to be regarded as one of the best teams of all time. I'm not going to put the cart ahead of the horse on this, but when you are beating a quality 26-win team in the Sweet 16 by 30 points, it's outrageous. And you're doing it, by the way, without a huge game from Donovan Clingan. But you had Cam Spencer, who had 18 points, Tristan Newton at 17. And it's almost like rummaging around the junk drawer and like looking through stuff. Like, oh, look what I found. I forgot I had this. That was Stephon Castle, who had his best game in his college career on Thursday night. He went for a double-double, 16 points, 11 rebounds. He was awesome. UConn was just a runaway there. And it was, I thought this was going to be Storrs East because Boston is east of Storrs, but they want to call it Storrs North. MSG, the garden, is referred to as Storrs South. So if it's going to be Storrs North, that's fine. The building must have been 65% UConn fans, and it was just so impressive. I was talking afterward with UConn assistant Tom Moore as he was walking out to do the scout with Luke Murray, the assistant, and we had a great little moment where he was like, I tell our GAs, I tell the young people in our program, like, that do not get used to this. This is not normal. What is happening here right now is not what, if you choose to remain in this profession and want to become coaches, this will not be the standard. Like, you cannot repeat this, what is happening there. So even the players and the staff recognize that what's happening here is really, really special. Credit to San Diego State for getting to a Sweet 16 for a second straight year. That was really, really impressive. As for the nightcap, and you get Illinois winning 72-69 over Iowa State, weird game, close game, not a super well-played game. You know, Iowa State thrives off of turning teams over, and talking to some folks on both sides before the game, I thought that ISU was going to have to at least turn Illinois over 15 times, and it just didn't happen. They got 12, but they shot worse than 50% at Iowa State on attempts inside 5 feet of the rim, missed a ton of bunnies. But Illinois refused to just take the game and run because it shot 15 of 29 from the foul line, you know, barely above 50%. Terrence Shannon Jr. had foul trouble in the second half. He sat for more than 5.5 minutes. He gets 29 points. If they didn't have him available, and some would obviously argue, given the issues that Shannon has encountered, he shouldn't have even been available for the game. But regardless, he is playing. Illinois would not have won the game. Marcus Damask only had 7 points. Coleman Hawkins had some decent opportunities there. But the offense without Shannon Jr. on the floor was noticeably bad. Iowa State pushed and pushed and pushed, just didn't shoot well enough. I mean, it was 17 of 45 from 2-point range and 6 of 13, decent enough from three. They needed more. Illinois, they won a scrappy battle. They win it by three and they advance. And in advancing, oh, by the way, provide us with, I think, the best possible Elite Eight matchup we could have asked for here in Boston, because now we've got the number one team versus the number two team. And Illinois has the personnel and the style, I think, maybe to keep this close. I mean, I talked with Brad Underwood afterward. First of all, what I didn't get in my column, I'll share it here because who knows if I'll be able to use it on Saturday. He does have some superstitions. He does. He's been wearing the same white shoes, size 13, since the Big Ten tournament started. They haven't lost yet, so he kept that with. He takes a nap after pregame meals. He has 3 eggs over medium every single morning. His pregame meal routine is pretty much the same. He's not Dan Hurley. He's not having the same clothes and laundry and underwear and the 8 M&Ms. There won't be any orange M&Ms or blue. I guess no blue M&Ms for Dan Hurley tomorrow. It's a different kind of shade of blue. Maybe I got to do some reporting on that. I got to text Hurley and be like, hey, listen, would you eat that blue M&M because it's not Illinois blue? Regardless, he's a man with some superstitions. But he also told me, you know, this team can be beat. They have been beaten this year. And Illinois plays something known as booty ball. And basically, like, they'll try and throw it down low to Dane Danger or Coleman Hawkins or try and swing it all around. We'll see if they can handle that. UConn is on an outrageous run here. I mean, 9 straight tournament games dating back to last year with a double-digit margin. It's a plus 13 on average, which is the second greatest margin of victory for a reigning champion of the following tournament to LaSalle in the early 50s. UConn's overall, plus 86 through 3 games, is the 9th best in the history of the expanded field. I mean, it's one thing after another. They just continue to make history. And so my column focused on, okay, can we just get Illinois to give us a game? Because as someone who loves this tournament, loves cover, I want a good game. Like, if UConn blows them out, sure, I'll write about that. There's some awe to that in general. But I would love to see UConn actually get itself caught in a game. Even Dan Hurley joked in the postgame that, his direct... I'm going to quote his direct quote here was... Because they continue to just dominate. We suck at winning close games, so you have to go with the alternative, and he's half serious on that. Can we just see Illinois even try and keep it close? UConn fans will flood the building. Illinois fans, you have traveled well. I'm impressed, but I would guess it's going to be 75-25, maybe 70-30 split. We'll have to see on all of that. But that's your East Regional Final set up for Saturday. That game will be the first tip, 6:09 p.m. Eastern. The late tip is Clemson, Brad Brownell, and Alabama. So we wait and see on that. And we are down to 12 teams. But we've got to get to Friday night's regional semifinals that are going down in Dallas and in Detroit. So when we come back from the break, we're going to break down those games for you, set the table, set the stage, and tell you what you need to watch for Friday night in the NCAA tournament. You're watching the Eye on College Basketball podcast on CBS Sports Network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on CBS Sports Network. I am Gary Parrish, joined by Matt Norlander. We look back at last night. Let's look ahead to Friday night. Four more Sweet 16 games on tap. We're going to start in the South. 7:09 Eastern tip. It's a 2-seed Marquette against an 11-seed NC State. They're going to do it down in Dallas. Norlander, you brave enough to pick the Wolfpack?
Was I brave? I don't think I was brave enough to actually pick Clemson yesterday, but I told you it was on the table. I am not brave enough. Well, by the way, real quick, as we get ready to pick this, can you straighten me out? Was Thursday a good day for the ACC? Because Clemson won and then North Carolina lost. So like as we adjudicate the status of this league by the hour, can you make the final judgment here? Was Thursday a positive development for the ACC?
I will say the exact same thing about the ACC that I've been saying since the moment we started playing this tournament, that anything that happens in the tournament should not be considered a referendum on that league. You can say, hey, look at all these teams we got into the Sweet 16. Isn't that amazing? And then I can say, hey, the team that finished third in your league got blown out by Colorado State in the first four. And then you can say, yeah, but look at Clemson. And I can say, yeah, but look at North Carolina, just lost to an SEC team whose coach about a month ago said, my team can't guard anybody. And that's who you lost to. So it, you know, here's what I think. I think North Carolina was good all season and then lost in the Sweet 16. I think Duke has been good, not great all season. We'll see where this thing goes. I think Clemson has been solid all season, but nobody expected them to get here. Pitt might have deserved a bid to the NCAA tournament based on everything we know. Like, if you want to make that argument, I'm not going to fight you on it. And outside of that, I don't really care. Is that a fair assessment?
Okay. Sure. I think you got to cover. I'm not going to take NC State. I would love to get some real drama here and get some, like, give me just pure DJ Burns action in this game here. But as a reminder, like, Burns does a lot. It's DJ Horn who's the guy that's got to come up big, and how he is defended. I would assume Stevie Mitchell is getting the assignment on DJ Horn. I mean, Stevie Mitchell's a really good defender. I got to think that Shock is going to put the bogey on him. And then they got to hope guys like Jaden Taylor, Casey Morsell, a couple of guys, you know, good for 12 or so points a game. Can they show up big in this spot, GP? Because this kind of matchup, I think, is a Tyler Kolek special. Maybe Oso Iguodaro, because he's such a different kind of big, finds himself having a really good night for whatever reason, because his style matches up well against Burns. Maybe. I honestly don't know. If you told me that we had Iguodaro and Burns trading buckets down the stretch in the second half, I'm signing up right now. I will go with Marquette in the spot, Kolek to have a really big game. Statistically, just keep in mind that NC State It's not an exceptional team on offense here. It has been able to jump up after being, you know, outside the top 50 in offensive efficiency. This tournament run in the ACC has been able to really jump its numbers, but it still only makes as a team sub 35% from three. It's only a 50% shooting team from two. That's basically like middle of the road in all of D1, not even among high major teams. It's been an awesome run. If it continues, that would be I would embrace the storyline, but I do like Marquette here, and I will say Marquette semi-comfortably somewhere in the neighborhood, you know, like 78-68 or so, getting it done and moving on to the Elite Eight.
I'll save a pick for the end of the show, but just on NC State, obviously they're the only double-digit seed left in this thing, but they're not a typical double-digit seed. Like a double-digit seed that comes from a mid-major is like, you know, they're usually seeing some stuff they ain't really seen too often. At NC State, you've been in the ACC. They're on a 7-game winning streak. In that winning streak, they've beaten Duke. They've beaten North Carolina. When you've done those things, like Marquette's a different challenge, sure. But when you've beaten Duke and beaten North Carolina, you don't look at Marquette and then go, man, I don't know how we're going to do this. I don't know that they'll win the game. I promise you, they think that they're going to. 9:39 Eastern in the same region. It'll be the 1-seed Houston against the 4-seed Duke Blue Devils. That's going to be in Dallas as well. This is probably the marquee game of the night. Houston is in the Sweet 16, but they have not looked quite like themselves on their way to getting here. Got blown out in the Big 12 tournament by Iowa State, lost by 28. And then in the round of 32, you see it there, they won 195 in overtime. But the concerning number is they gave up 95 points to a Texas A&M team that's not the best offensive team in the country. I know it was 45 minutes, but you could have told me they played 55 minutes, and there was a point in the season where I'd have told you, I don't think anybody scored 95 on Houston. You give them 60 minutes, I don't think they can do it. Does Houston's recent struggles, any of that concern you heading into this game against a Duke team that, don't ever forget, been a little up and down all season, but you know, the preseason number two in the AP poll, and they got 5-star McDonald's All-Americans all over the court?
Yeah, I mean, this does set up. The stage is set for Duke to potentially, I was there, I saw him in person in Brooklyn. That's where they played the first weekend. And if Kyle Filipowski really emerges here, Jared McCain continues his campaign. I mean, he's unquestionably been one of the three or four best freshmen in the country this season. If he can show up and play well again, now he is going to have Jamal Shedd guarding him. And Jamal Shedd is on the short list. I'm talking top three on-ball defenders in all of college basketball. So when you watch Duke versus Houston, there's going to be a lot going on there. Just watch how Houston opts to guard and smother McCain, because Filipowski is the best player. But I think that so much of what Duke does is really triggered by McCain's ability to get the team going. So that's a big one to watch. You know, Jeremy Roach in this spot as a veteran Duke guard, this might be the kind of game where, like, wouldn't surprise me if at some point here today, John Shire has a little heart to heart with Jeremy Roach and says, listen, I've been in your shoes. I was a senior at Duke. We made a Final Four run. This is your moment here. They may well need it. It's a really tremendous matchup. This is your CBS late game here on Friday, and Duke is coming in and playing its best basketball. Houston is not. Houston is the better team. Houston is the favored team, but this feels close to a toss-up. It's my most anticipated watch of the night, GP.
Let's bounce over to the Midwest region. That's going to be in Detroit. We got a 7:39 p.m. Eastern tip. Number 1 seed Purdue against number 5 seed Gonzaga. These teams playing back in November. Purdue won it, but that was 4 months ago, and Gonzaga is obviously a different team now. Do you think Gonzaga gains anything from having already been on the court for 40 minutes with Zach Edey and the Boilermakers?
I think it does. To say it doesn't, I think, would just be intellectually dishonest, because they have played this season. Now, it was back in Maui. And there's actually quite a few, as we thought was the case, there's been quite a few teams that were in Maui that are still sticking around in this tournament, including the likes of Tennessee and Creighton. So keep that in mind. I guess Creighton was a year ago. But yeah, keep that in mind. We still got Marquette was another one that was there. And I think having faced him, so they can't simulate Zach Edey in practice, it does help a little bit. But that staff knows that it's going to be have to probably almost certainly be above like 1.20 points per possession to beat Purdue. To hope that the guards don't have a good game. Edie almost certainly is going to get his. Gonzaga just does not have anyone to counteract Edie. Like Graham EK, Ben Gray, EK would be the one that's assigned to handle him, or maybe Watson. Watson's got some good defense. I just don't see it. Like, I think you just have to mark down, if we do a good job on Edie, then he's at 20 points and 12 rebounds. That's restricting the National Player of the Year. Then you need Ryan Nemhard to have a huge game and outplay Braden Smith, who's a pretty good point guard in his own right here. And pressure is still on with Purdue. I will say that. Like, Gonzaga it's absurd that it's in its ninth straight Sweet 16. That's a joke. Gonzaga's been to 9 straight. Houston now has been to 5 straight with its appearance this season. But Purdue, a loss against Gonzaga, and it's not changing anyone's mind about this program. I mean, it is an accomplishment to get to the second weekend, but you have a 1 next to your name, and people are demanding, not asking, not requesting a Final Four showing. I think this game has the potential, because Gonzaga has had a flair for the dramatic parish in this tournament, in this event over the years. If you told me it was close, and by close, I mean like Gonzaga up 1 with a minute to go, it wouldn't surprise me. But Purdue is the favorite for a reason.
Yeah, usually folks are waiting around so eager to tell you Gonzaga was overrated or Gonzaga didn't play anybody. And so the pressure is on the Zags to deliver in the NCAA tournament. And yet, if the Zags lose this one, nobody will question them. It'll just be like, hey, they were in the Sweet 16 for the 9th straight year. That's amazing. Then they ran into a 1 seed. What are you going to do? But if Purdue loses this game, their dream season will once again become a nightmare. And people will forever look back on the 2 years where Zach Edey was the National Player of the Year and Purdue was the Big Ten outright champs. And Purdue was a number 1 seed in the tournament. And they'll forever look back on those 2 years and say, but you know what happened to them. First, they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. And then in that second year, they got caught. Yeah. 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 It'll be looked at. The Buffalo Bills once making 4 straight Super Bowls by winning 4 straight AFC championships is an incredible accomplishment. People do not look back on it as an incredible accomplishment. It's looked back on as, those guys could never win the big one. You don't want Zach Edey's career to be tainted by that. You don't want Matt Painter to have to still carry around that stuff. So sure, if you're a Zags fan, you're probably rooting for Gonzaga. And if you're an Indiana fan, you might be rooting for Gonzaga too. But I think largely people kind of would like to see Matt Painter and Zach Edey see this thing through. And, the next step in that process is tonight, 7:39 Eastern. Then late night, 10:09 Eastern in Dallas, 2-seed Tennessee, 3-seed Creighton, Dalton Connect on one side, Baylor Shireman on the other. As always, who knows? But this at least has a chance to be the most interesting game, perhaps the most entertaining game on the schedule tonight, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Tennessee's defense and the way it plays physically, I think Creighton's built to withstand it. Matchup that I'm most keyed on is Jonas Adu and Ryan Kalkbrenner. Adu's the forward. He's the best defender Tennessee has, and how will those guys neutralize the other down low? I'm really intrigued by that. Who does Creighton assign to stop Dalton Connect? Connect averages 21.1 points. He can be a flamethrower. Trey Alexander, is that going to be your guy? Is that how you're going to shut him down? I think they've got a chance at doing it. The tournament, as what we saw on Thursday night, there's always a possibility that guys that we rely on to play well just don't show up. Creighton doesn't have depth here. So just keep this in mind when you watch the game. It cannot get caught in a physical matchup against Tennessee. And then Kalkbrenner's got too early. Shireman's got too early. They just don't have depth. And they have to avoid that. Tennessee's gonna want to get it physical game, GP. Like, there's no doubt about it whatsoever. If they can get it to be a physical game, Creighton in foul trouble, they're gonna have a good advantage there, because Tennessee is going to rely more on just Connect. Like Zakai Ziegler, Stephen Ashworth's defense has actually been improved this season, but I wonder if the point guard battle doesn't also help really dictate which way this game goes. This is a fantastic, fabulous two versus three matchup. They do play different styles, and I can see either team winning by eventually ever so slightly having its style of play win out. But if I were to reduce it to one guy in this game that will determine it, it is the play of Dalton Knecht. If you tell me that Creighton can keep him under 20, I'm going to tell you Creighton wins. If you tell me that he's scoring 24 plus, Tennessee has lost games when he's gone off before, but I would lean toward Tennessee winning if he has a good game where he's like 25, 26, 27 points GP.
When we come back, we'll turn our attention away from the Sweet 16. Some interesting comments from Auburn coach Bruce Pearl about how some Auburn fans are treating one of his players on social media after a mistake in this NCAA tournament. We'll talk through that next. It's the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, CBS Sports Network. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. I'm Gary Parrish, joined by Matt Norlander, and we'll step away from the Sweet 16 for just a second to discuss interesting comments from Auburn coach Bruce Pearl. You might remember Auburn lost opening round NCAA tournament to Yale, and Chad Baker Mazar, the Tigers' third leading scorer, was ejected very early after throwing an elbow at Yale's August Mahoney after this development, and Auburn loses. Apparently, some Auburn fans have been really going hard on social media at one of their own, and Bruce Pearl took an opportunity yesterday to address it. He said the following, quote, Chad's apparently getting harassed on social media after getting, He said, I'm just going to tell the Auburn family, while I know you're disappointed, if somebody was messing with your son, you'd stand up for your son a little bit, wouldn't you? And then he continued, stop messing with my son. Stop it. He apologized. He made a mistake, and I'm calling you out. I'm not having it. For those on social media that want to continue to harass Chad, unfollow those people. Stop it. End quote. This is the latest example of a coach or player highlighting how toxic it can get on social media for college basketball players or football players, or I imagine even volleyball players and softball players in some instances. It's just sort of where we're at in the year 2024. College athletes are going to have to deal with criticism in a way that they've never had to previously because, you know, fans, anybody can create a X/Twitter account. They don't make you take an IQ test to do that. And then they can just fire right at you whenever they want to. You better learn how to use the block button or get some real thick skin.
Yeah, there's a couple things here. It's not just that. You and I are kind of old heads, so we're kind of, you know, we're mostly on Twitter/X, but Instagram, TikTok, these kind of things that these players are using. I don't know if this is going away. And in talking to coaches about this issue over the past couple of years, it is the fact that players who enter college are 18, 19, 20 years old. Just keep in mind, like, many of these young men and women have been using social media since they were 12 or 13 years old. Not saying that's when they should use it. I'm just saying that's the case often. So it is part of their everyday, every hour existence, just as it is for a lot of other people, but they are using multiple different screens and apps and looking through this stuff. And they are, because of that, they're more prone to use it. They're more prone to be affected by it. And be careful what you wish for here. Fans have been booing players forever. That's not going to change, but with name, image, and likeness profitability here, fans are going to hold players more accountable. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's going to happen. You're now getting, people are going to know you're going to get paid. They're going to hold you on the hook because of all of that, because of the potential for the portal to push guys away. Fan bases might think in the moment that, like, this guy stunk in this game. So yeah, I don't care if he leaves. Just careful what you wish for. I wish, you know, there could be a little more, you know, reasonability and rationality around this, all this stuff, Parrish, but it's the internet. It's part of it. And if I was a college athlete, easy for me to say now because it's been it's been more than two decades since I enrolled in college. I would not have social media on my phone. There is no chance. There's no way you can convince me it's actually a healthy existence for a player. But that's my quick take on it.
Yeah, it's not healthy for any of us, I don't think. I think that's what the studies are going to show someday, Norlander, that this social media stuff wasn't good for any of us. But it is just sort of you know, the way we're living in 2024, and booing, that's always been a thing, but it's so impersonal. It seems like such from a distance almost. These days, you can't even look at your phone if you're a college basketball player and things aren't going so well without being bombarded with negativity. I'm confident it's not healthy. I don't know what the solution is, but it is obviously a real problem. Evidence being that yet another college coach had to address it with his own fans here in the past 24 hours. When we come back, one more segment to go. We'll pick all four of tonight's Sweet 16 games. We're going to do it next on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, CBS Sports Network. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. Before we get out of here, let's close things by picking tonight's games. Let's do it rapid fire, and let's do it in the order that they're going to tip. The higher seeded team is the favorite in each game. We'll start it with Marquette, NC State. Can you push the Wolfpack into the Elite Eight, Deadleg?
I can't. I spoiled this one earlier in the show. I will go Marquette. I'm going to give you a score for each game rapid fire. Marquette, 78. NC State, 68. What you got, Parrish?
I will also take Marquette to advance. Purdue Gonzaga will tip off after that one. Boilermakers into the Elite Eight, one game short of the Final Four, or another disappointing season ending?
Gonzaga keeps it intriguing. Gonzaga has a lead at the half, but Purdue steadies itself, gets it done. Boilermakers win 82-77.
I also have Purdue winning the game. I do think Gonzaga will make it competitive. I don't think it'll be over with, say, 6 minutes to go. Houston Duke, that's the big one down in Dallas. Houston is the favorite as the one seed. I'll go ahead and tell you, I'm going to pick Houston to advance just because that's where my bracket has been, and I'm not going to break away from my bracket. But this is the one that I'm least confident in. Houston hasn't been sharp, and Duke is as talented as anybody.
I will go Houston to get past Duke. I'm with you. It seems extremely vulnerable. I won't be shocked whatsoever. I'm giving you a score every time. Parrish is refusing to do so. Give me Houston. Give me Houston 75, Duke 73.
Tennessee Creighton's going to be the last game to tip off tonight. I've got Tennessee winning a close game. I think at the under four, it'll still be undecided, perhaps a one possession game. I'll take the Vols. Who you got?
I got Creighton winning. I have them in the Final Four. I have got Creighton 73, Tennessee 70.
Four more Sweet 16 games tonight. Can't wait to watch them. Then we get the Elite Eight on Saturday, the Elite Eight on Sunday, and the Final Four be here before you know it. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry Teagle, Huck Larnell. Thank you guys for watching the Ion College Basketball Podcast. We'll be back on Monday afternoon right here on CBS Sports Network.
Ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.